You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down to earth.
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja.
We love the earth.
It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Monday, October 23rd, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Creeping up on Halloween as well. All sorts of great events happening around the country. Here in Portland, Oregon, they'll have the Dope Cup here again. I'll be heading out there. I was Donald Trump last year. I was the scariest costume I could think of, and boy, was it turned out to be true. I've also taken this year to making a Donald Trumpkin. I have a Donald Trumpkin on the front porch. Check out my Instagram feed at MJ Agenda Instagram for the Marijuana Agenda, or Radical Russ for my own personal Instagram. I put it on both of them, so you can see my Donald Trumpkin. The Dope Cup's going to be a lot of fun. They got Warren G coming out to the cup, so we'll have some premium hip-hop entertainment going on. It'll be a lot of fun. Check that out, Dope Magazine's Dope Cup here in Portland, Oregon. Also, we are looking forward to today's show, where we've got our patient-focused update to bring to you today. Americans for Safe Access, the leading organization fighting for medical cannabis patients all across America and around the world. You can hear Dr. Jahan Marku, their chief science officer. He joined me to discuss what are the latest educational and training opportunities for medical professionals and others who want to know more about medical cannabis. We're finally starting to get to some standardization, some education, and some accountability through accreditation and other means. So we'll learn more about that with Jahan Marku today. Also on the program, we'll have time for a radical rant where I ask the important question, whoever said that cannabis was going to be different than any other agricultural commodity? We're going to talk a little bit about capitalism, a little bit about agriculture, and a little bit about transitioning through different historical economies and why it's so necessary for us to readjust our thinking in the cannabis community, especially those of us who've been on the grow side of the ledger for so many years. That's coming up on the show, but also we've got our cannabis headline news that's coming up next with some big headlines coming out of Central America and stories from pot-smoking celebrities to tell you about. Let's get to the news.
This is your cannabis headline news, brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Monday, October 23rd, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. The Central American nation of Belize could be the next country to decriminalize the possession of personal amounts of marijuana. The parliament has given approval to an amendment to the nation's Misuse of Drugs Act that declares, quote, the mere possession of 10 grams or less of marijuana will no longer be a crime, end quote, according to Eladio Aragon, Belize's Minister of State for Home Affairs. Aragon also added that possession above 10 grams would not be a crime in one's home. Hotels would be allowed to permit marijuana smoking, sparking a potential tourism boom for this beach paradise on the Caribbean Sea. Aragon further stated that, quote, the Misuse of Drugs Act bill will exclude industrial hemp from the definition of cannabis, end quote. Legal hemp, said Aragon, would open up a, quote, vibrant industry that has great potential for Belize, end quote. Fallout from the Washington Post 60 Minutes investigation into the law hampering DEA from cracking down on the opioid overdose crisis continues as more than 30 U.S. senators demanded a report on the matter that is now 6 months overdue. The journalists uncovered how big pharmaceutical companies, through their allies in Congress, passed a law that allowed them to continue manufacturing and marketing powerful opioid painkillers through so-called pill mills and other fraudulent and deceptive means. The resulting scandal caused the Trump administration's nominee for head of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, Representative Tom Marino of Pennsylvania, to withdraw from consideration. Marino had led the congressional effort to pass the pharma-friendly law. That law had within it a requirement that the Drug Enforcement Administration and the Department of Health and Human Services report on the effectiveness of the law as of April 16th of this year. To date, no such report has been produced. In an interview with CalvinEyer.com, Nevada Gaming Control Board member Terry Johnson warned against allowing marijuana use in any way in the state's casinos. Quote, "We want to make sure that there will be no commingling of cash between the gaming industry and the marijuana industry," said Johnson, "because the latter cannot use the traditional banking system," end quote. Johnson also expressed concern on the issue of medical or recreational marijuana use by any of the state's 120,000 gaming employees. Quote, "In the event of a federal prosecution, since it is still illegal in the federal law, we want to make sure that no gaming employees or gaming executives are criminally prosecuted. We want to make sure that there's no forfeiture of gaming assets in the event of a federal prosecution," end quote, he said. Woody Harrelson made headlines when he announced earlier this year that he quit smoking marijuana. Now, in a new interview you can find on MarijuanaMoment.net, the Oscar-nominated actor said it was difficult to share the decision with his cannabis enthusiast friend, singer Willie Nelson. Quote, "That was a very hard one to break," he said in an appearance on Jimmy Kimmel Live on Friday. Quote, "At first, I'm pretending to smoke a joint. I'm just holding it because I don't want him to know. And then finally, I'm like, Willie, I quit," end quote. But it has apparently taken Nelson some time to come to terms with the change. Quote, "And still it never fails. The joint comes around and he passes it to me," Harrelson said. "He keeps waiting for me to smoke again," end quote. Former child star Corey Feldman, known for his roles in The Goonies and The Lost Boys, has been arrested for marijuana possession in Louisiana. Feldman was due to perform with his band in Monroe as part of his Heavenly U.S. Angelic tour. Mangum Police Chief Perry Fleming told the News Star that Feldman will have to pay a fine, and he was released after being charged. According to Normal, for first offenders, possession of 14 grams or less of marijuana is punishable by a fine of up to $300 and or up to 15 days of imprisonment. More than 14 grams can be a $500 fine and up to 6 months imprisonment. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Monday, October 23rd, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
And here comes Chris Hill, 4 feet six out of Jefferson Elementary, a confident young man with a great stride, but uh-oh, he might be in trouble now.
Hey, Chris. Want to get high? No way, man. This stuff's for losers.
Oh, what a move! Chris Hill never hesitates, just blows past that guy. Bob?
You're right, Mike. Look, Chris is known for his great head shake. Then he shifts his weight to the right foot, finds a hole, and zip, he's out of there.
Spectacular, just spectacular. This kid's got a bright future.
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at MJAgenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the gay agenda, only with better music.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. If you appreciate my full-time dedication to reporting and analyzing the news about cannabis, consider becoming a patron of the show. For just $4.20 per month, you'll help keep my live stream and podcast free while earning yourself your own private ad-free podcast link for the show, as well as links to the supporting articles and data. For a $9.99 VIP subscription, you'll get all that plus my exclusive research, data tables, and graphics. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button today.
Welcome to ACE's Patient Focused Update. Almost every U.S. state now recognizes some form of cannabis as medicine. But since 1971, the federal government has steadfastly denied the medical benefits of herbal cannabis. Americans for Safe Access is the nation's leading organization fighting for the rights of all patients who use cannabis as medicine. Join us now for another edition of ACE's Patient Focused Update.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Patient Focused Update with Americans for Safe Access. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us today is Chief Science Officer Dr. Jehan Marku. Dr. Marku, welcome back.
Thank you, Russ. It's good to be back. There's been a lot of things going on in the world of medical cannabis.
Absolutely. And as we head into the winter months, there's all sorts of events and training we need to tell people about. But I just got back from the Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference, and one of the major topics there was the opioid overdose crisis. We're looking at 60,000 people losing their lives in 2016 due to overdose on opiates. And we've also seen the data, the surveys, the studies coming out showing that medical marijuana, medical cannabis can be a help in this particular regard. So could we talk a little bit about that, the opioid crisis and medical cannabis, how that intersects and maybe what Americans for Safe Access has to offer?
Yes. So as you know, this is an issue that affects a lot of people. It's estimated that 100 million Americans suffer from some form of chronic pain, of which, you know, they may have been prescribed opioid or an opioid-based medication for long-term use. And the issue here is that with some of these medications that are, you know, gone through rigorous FDA trials, they present their own health issues with long-term use. And, that's one of the issues that people are dealing with. And now there was a recent article that came out about a study between like 2002 and 2005 where they looked at opioid use. It was funded by NIDA. You may have seen Sam talk about how cannabis access leads to increased opiate use, which would be counterintuitive. And this study I just wanted to debunk for a minute that has made the rounds. And the authors themselves cited about 7 or 8 reasons why their research doesn't really mean very much. One is thing that they left out of the study is that when they started the study, there were about 11 dispensaries open in the country, and they're trying to associate that with an increase, a national increase in opioid use and opioid use disorders. But even the researchers in this study on prescription opioid use based on data that's 16 years ago said that all these results should be interpreted with, quote, caution, unquote, as in it's not meant really to be a policy guiding. It's just a benchmark to show us that this opioid epidemic was beginning and has been going on for a long time. And now that we're seeing more and more safe access centers, more people having access to standardized cannabis products, we're starting to see that the impact of the opioid crisis tempered a little bit in some states, like such as the Baalbacher study. And so with this idea in mind and making a cannabis an option for pain, ACE set up November 1st as a National Cannabis as an Opioid Option for Pain Awareness Day. And if you go to safeaccessnow.org/take_action, you can click on 4 really simple links. One is to RSVP for a solidarity event in either Washington, D.C., Idaho, Kansas, Missouri, New Mexico. There are also events going on with groups we've partnered with in Pennsylvania and Illinois, as well as other states. You can find out who's meeting and what they're doing. I believe we just got a march permit in D.C. for November 1st. Also, you can sign a petition, which you should do by November 30th, calling on President Trump to formally declare the opioid epidemic. You can also directly tweet the president from our links, as well as tweet Congress to have them declare the national health emergency.
We hope everyone will get involved with that. Check out safeaccessnow.org for more information on this opioid campaign on November 1st in cities all across America. Dr. Mark, we'd also like to make sure that people are aware of the training that Americans for Safe Access is offering. There's so much to be learned in the field of medical cannabis between the laws, the regulations, and then, of course, the science and the medicine of it. Tell us what's the latest from Americans for Safe Access.
Great. Thank you. So right off the bat, we're doing a live training in Maryland, November 6th and 7th. And this is going to be, first day is going to be kind of a basic introductory course on the 6th. So the core cannabis training you need through our research that we published last year and helping design a study on the science-based cannabis training, really addressing what people who work at dispensaries need to know. Everything from customer care to how to deal with law enforcement interactions. And the second day is what we're calling the verified professional day, where we're actually going to teach much more advanced courses on quality control, quality assurance, and training those people who might be wanting to be inspectors or assessors for regulatory compliance. So this might apply to regulators, people who work at cannabis businesses, people who work for accreditation bodies. This is a day for them to gain a higher level of understanding. How do you go into an operation and take everything we know about cannabis and everything we know about the regs and put that together into a coherent plan to make sure that that business will stay open and survive any scrutiny? And so, you know, November 6th and 7th in Baltimore and in Maryland, you can sign up remotely to take this training. And remember, we're a nonprofit, so these are donations that people are making for the training. And that's one of the things that makes us unique, I think, in the training space, is that this is not something that is going to a private fund. You know, all of our funds are geared towards patient advocacy, doing events like End Pain, Not Lives, and things like that. So if you want to get educated and support medical cannabis patients, this is a win-win for that. And we are going to have more trainings coming up in December as well, a series of them. We're also going to be potentially doing a training in Memphis, Tennessee, coming up for Louisiana, Tennessee, and Arkansas. Pretty exciting stuff there. I'm actually going to be going next week to speak with their task force about how to implement standards, because you know they're moving forward on cannabis, but there's always some people who are nervous that, how will we implement these standards? How will we keep tabs on the good players and the bad players? And by having a voluntary certification that the standards were developed by the industry itself, people will be more likely to adhere to those standards. And so I think those are the big events coming for PFC. And I'd also say, again, we have online modules that are ready to go. So if you go to patientfocuscertification.org, you can sign up for a ton of great courses as well. And if you have any questions, you can email info@patientfocuscertification.org, and we can send you a course guide, more information. We also have a ton of YouTube videos that are getting posted. If you're wondering what we're talking about with this training, one video I'd encourage you to check out on our Safe Access YouTube channel is What to Expect When Being Inspected. And it's a presentation based on my experience training regulators and other inspectors to go into cannabis operations and assess their regulatory compliance. And it discusses how to think like an inspector. What information are they gathering? Are they looking at your application? Are they looking at your Twitter feed? How are they gathering that evidence for an inspection? And so I think What to Expect When Being Inspected is a great one-hour example of the future of regulations, the future of regulatory compliance. And we just recorded a new webinar on innovative extraction methods with John McKay, of former Waters senior director. And he has probably helped install more CO2 extraction equipment in this country than any other single person. And he gave this amazing webinar we'll be updating soon to the YouTube page. He actually gave it last night, where he discussed what's left behind in extraction vessels and actually showed that some extraction processes leave behind potentially thousands of dollars of useful things in what you would normally throw away. And so, you know, there is definitely room when it comes to extraction and innovating in that regard, making it more efficient. And again, potentially saving a lot of money by using science and applying that. And one of the things you want to think about is good is not a number. A lot is not a number. You know, it's really, if you want to be efficient and save a lot of money with extraction, you really have to define what is a lot. Oh, I put in this amount and I got a lot out. Well, how do you know it's a lot? How much did you leave behind when you did that extraction? And so process validation, method validation, and things like that are becoming increasingly more important.
And speaking of the science of extraction, many people out there are just new to the world of medical cannabis, and they're just learning about some of the science behind it, learning about our endocannabinoid system, learning about the different types of cannabinoids that are out there. What do you have at Americans for Safe Access with regards to access to science information?
Well, if you go to safeaccessnow.org/reports, we have very detailed, lengthy reports which have sections in them which address quality control and those standards and provide a lot of good references. And those will give you, you know, so some of them are written as a World Health style report on a medicine. And so it contains all that information you'd want to know. What are the quality standards? What products are available on the market and what are their specifications and how are they regulated? What information is available about those products interacting with our body and what are the short-term and long-term benefits and potential drawbacks of using these different medications. So there's a ton of free information. You know, that's one of the things I love about working at a nonprofit is, you know, our information is usually not behind a paywall. It's member supported, so it goes out into the public. And so we have probably a dozen reports or so, four or five of which were published in the last 12 months, all available on there. We also recently are now working with Ethan Russo. He's joined our partner research institution, the International Cannabis and Cannabinoid Institute, and I'm going to be getting to work directly with him on some research starting early next year. And Ethan and I, Dr. Russo and I, just published a book chapter called Cannabis Pharmacology, The Usual Suspects and a Few Promising Leads. And if you contact us either by social media or through the ASA page, I'd be happy to send people a copy of that book chapter. It's also free and available on ResearchGate, where us academics and nerds go to post our publications. If you don't know about ResearchGate, it's pretty cool. And so I'd encourage people to either check out the reports section of the ASA website or, you know, reach out to Dr. Russo or myself, and we can send you some of the latest research that's been published this year. And, you know, and there's some really interesting things that are evolving. You know, one of the stories I love sharing with people is osamine, which is this rare terpene, but it seems to be popping up in abundance in California cannabis. And why it's interesting is, one is we don't know what it does with humans, so there's a whole area of research to explore how it might alter the effects of THC or CBD in the human body, for example. But it's also a regulator of honeybees. Honeybees use osamine as a social drug. I don't know if it's like Xanax to them or whatever, but without it, their colonies could collapse or suffer other issues. And it's prevalent in cannabis. And this may be why some people have reported success with making cannabis honey and some have not. But this fact has not been lost on law enforcement. And there's a very cute research paper paid for by taxpayers in which researchers try to train honeybees to detect drugs and say, well, you know, these are actually easier to train and less expensive than German shepherds. And, you know, by commercializing honeybees, we could actually potentially save a lot of the varieties of honeybees out there by developing commercial applications. So unfortunately, you know, it's unclear how many other plants make osamine, which might confuse the bees, but it's still interesting to see that even in this day and age, you know, law enforcement is still very active at looking at diversion and transporting across state lines and are now even employing the insect world to assist with that.
That's amazing. Dr. Jehan Marku is the Chief Science Officer for Americans for Safe Access. The website is safeaccessnow.org. Don't forget the opioid campaign beginning or happening on November 1st. And Dr. Marku, thanks so much for your expertise. We appreciate you joining us here on the Marijuana Agenda.
Thank you so much. And just one last thing. If you want more information about the opioid campaign, email marissa@safeaccessnow.org, and she can answer all your questions and hook you up with any other resources you might need for the National Pain Awareness Day.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the conservative agenda, minus the hypocrisy.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Total war against public enemy number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
Well, as we went through the rants last week, I talked a lot about the Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference and how broad the focus has become. Is that a contradiction to say a broad focus? Anyway, how broad the movement has become to cover so many different angles. And part of this, of course, would be the change in one of my favorite groups out there, Law Enforcement Action Partnership, which began its life as Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And LEAP has, in kind of a microcosm of what's been going on the broader drug policy reform movement. LEAP, of course, was started by ex-cops, prosecutors, and judges who saw the war on drugs to be a complete failure and saw it as something that had to end in order for us to address, you know, policing. It was corrupting police. It was causing a disintegration in relations between the police and the people and so forth. So they began as LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and spoke out against the war on drugs. But as the issue has evolved, as we've begun legalizing, there's become more to this war on drugs. People are beginning to realize or recognize what's called intersectionality, how the war on drugs intersects with all these other issues, like, you know, the problems of police gunning down unarmed black men, like the problems of police being too quick to deploy, you know, tear gas and tasers and shooting dogs and all these other things that are happening that are bad policing that are kind of ancillary to what's going on in the war on drugs, right? You could end the war on drugs, but you still would have bad policing that needs to be adjusted. So, or addressed, I should say. So LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, became Law Enforcement Action Partnership. as they sought out or sought to address this greater issue of the need for police reform. Now, I think that's fantastic because I am a person who is not just a single issue marijuana reformer. I'm for greater reforms in our criminal justice system, in our civics, in all sorts of areas, you know, civil rights and so forth. So it works great for me. But there are others who question this. And I've received some correspondence from a few, and I'm not going to name them, but I've received some correspondence from some people who lament this change, that it, you know, goes along with what I was ranting about last week about, has it become too broad? Because now that you're addressing these greater issues, the more you, it's like when I was first getting into lobbying and first getting into learning how legislatures worked and how you put a bill forth or an initiative to the people or whatever. And one of the pieces of advice that I had received was that the more you put into a bill or an initiative or a measure, the more there is for people to hate, the more targets there are to shoot down. And there only needs to be one bad thing in a bill to lose a sliver of your electorate, a sliver of your supporters, right? So you might want to do legalization of marijuana that allows home grow and legalizes industrial hemp and immediately releases all of the pot prisoners and immediately expunges all their records and sets up a system of commercial distribution and retail and sets up pot lounges and gets rid of pot DUIs, etc. You know, you might want to do all those things, but everything you put into it is something an opponent can shoot down, right? They might be fine with the legalizing the marijuana and letting people to grow their own, but maybe the pot shops throw them. Or maybe they don't like the idea of, wait a minute, we're going to release all the pot prisoners? Wait a minute. Now, again, this isn't right or wrong I'm talking about here. You may decide, like we did in Oregon, that, yeah, we're going to have all those things. That's what we believe in. That's what we're moving forward with. Other political circumstances, say you're more on the eastern side of the country, you might have to adjust. You might have to compromise a little bit. But the analogy I'm drawing here is one to our reform movement as well. If you're law enforcement against prohibition, you have a very specific mission, and there's only one thing for people to be for or against. They can be your ally if they, too, are against prohibition. But if you broaden that that mission, and now you're including, say, elements of Black Lives Matter, now there's something for certain segments of the population who might be with you on ending drug prohibition to now no longer be your ally, or at least be neutral toward you, maybe not an enemy, but at least neutral, because they don't agree with this other plank, this other platform that you're standing for. And again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying these are the factors that leaders of these organizations have to weigh out. Same things, you know, I will presume, because I don't know the leadership there, but I'll presume the same kind of discussions go on at Drug Policy Alliance, as far as how broad the coalition is going to be. You do attract more allies if you're covering more people, but you also have more targets for people to not agree with. It's a very delicate balancing act. And as this moves forward, there's an element to legalization that kind of has me thinking, and that is this seeming, especially from what I'll call the progressive left side of legalization. Like, there's a lot of different sides to legalization. There's a progressive lefty side that's always been involved with the ACLU and medical marijuana and such that is moving forward. But there's also a kind of a conservative libertarian side of legalization that's more of a states' rights, get the government out of my own business kind of side. But at least on the progressive lefty side, there seems to be this attitude, this feeling that with marijuana, we get the chance to do it right. With marijuana being a brand new industry, we can make it better and different than every other industry out there. And I wonder, one, is that possible? And two, is that something desirable? Let's start with the second one. Is it desirable? Is it desirable for us to want to move forward with this idea of legalization being the, you know, legalization of marijuana has to be something brand new and different, or we don't move forward. Is it desirable? And I ranted on that last week about, you know, if an imperfect legalization comes forward, are you going to support that if it doesn't address all of these other civil rights goals and criminal justice reform goals that we're looking for? Do we go forward with that? Because so far we have. Up till now, there's been a ton of compromises and people left out and bad negotiations that we've been told to swallow. All sorts of things. I mean, every legalization so far has made the compromise that we're going to legalize for age 21 and up, when we all know it's ages 18 to 25 that smoke the most pot. We are like taking the biggest demographic and only saying half of them can legally smoke pot, which is, as we're finding in the statistics, causing the rest of the focus, since they can no longer focus on the older college kids, now they're really focusing on the young people, like 15 to 20 they're focusing on. So now they got all those resources to focus on those who are still, you know, bustable for using weed, whether it's a ticket or an arrest. And that's a compromise we made. We made the compromise because we said, well, politically speaking, we're never going to get an age that's lower than that for alcohol. So that compromise was okay. Every medical marijuana law that's come up has made some sort of compromise. The compromise that at least says, well, healthy people, they can wait. They can still suffer arrests and stuff, because the most important thing is the patients. And then who are the patients? Well, every medical marijuana law since California has been fewer and fewer patients, has been compromising more of where that line is drawn. Well, we'll draw it a little closer. That line's a little too far into the chronic pain side. We'll pull that back a bit. Oh, well, that's too many people are getting this. So we've made all sorts of compromises when it comes to medical marijuana. So now, as someone who's a legalizer, who's wanting, like, my life's dream is to see my home state of Idaho finally be legal, right? And all of you out there who I meet across the country say, oh, my state's going to be the last state. North Carolina is going to be the last state legalized. Oh, Texas. Texas is going to be last state legalized. I'm telling you, folks, I got my money on Idaho. Idaho will be the last state to legalize. Although, okay, I'll hedge my bet a bit. Either Idaho or Kansas. And I'll put Kansas in there because Idaho's got the initiative process, so at least it's got a better shot than Kansas does. But I don't care. Anyway, it's my dream that marijuana gets legalized all throughout these 50 states. So as a legalizer who had to wait, oh, wait your turn. It's medical's turn. Medical has to go first. Oh, wait. I don't know how much I can counsel people to wait now that we're suddenly deciding, oh, it's all of us or none. Now that we're suddenly deciding, oh, no, we can't accept just any legalization. It has to end ban the box and let people out of prison and give 80% of the licenses to disadvantaged neighborhoods and et cetera. I don't know now. Hold on. How broad is this? I got into this to end the arrest of people who use pot. That was it. I didn't get into this figuring, all right, who's going to get rich from it? How am I going to create jobs from it? How am I going to ameliorate 4 centuries worth of racism? How am I going to make sure that we address inequalities? That's above my pay grade, man. Frankly, that's way beyond my schooling. My primary goal is, let's end the arrest of people who use pot. Let's get it legal. Then we can work on getting it equal. Right. I mean, like, I guess I've got this long arc of history, you know, kind of view to things, in that we don't solve the prohibition's a huge thing. And when you start to consider how much prohibition is entangled in every other aspect of American life, it's an even huger thing. So to try to expect that it's going to be all of us or none, that we're only going to pick, you know, if it's not good enough for everybody, that we're not going to move forward. I don't know. And we also have a similar situation, a failure to adjust, I guess you could call it, from people that are in the retail side of the industry. Whether you're talking about the pookies that Pastor Kenny talked about at the DPA Reform Conference, people involved in the streets and the retail level in the illicit market, or, as I called them, the Codys and the Jedediahs on the wholesale side of that market that are growing the big crops in Northern California and Southeastern Ohio and Kentucky and all those areas. People that have put food on the table for generations of their family because of a $2,000 wholesale pound or $5,000 wholesale pound if you're going east or whatever it might be. And those people are going to have to adjust their lives too. They're not, the days of $1,000 pounds are gone, man. It's going to be hundreds and even less than $100 eventually. Marijuana is not going to be some sort of magical crop that maintains $300 an ounce retail prices once you get rid of the prohibition risk, once people are no longer going to prison for it, once it can be mass produced, mass trimmed, mass cultivated. And yeah, sure, it's going to be the Budweiser of weed. It's going to be the Coors Light of weed. I don't drink Budweiser. You don't drink Budweiser. So what if someone else wants to drink Budweiser? Overall, it's going to bring the prices of all weed way down to a level where the Pookies on the street and the Jedediahs in the mountains can't make the same living they used to make. It's just impossible. As impossible as some guy that was a buggy whip manufacturer in the late 1800s had to adjust. People that made aluminum jewelry in the 1800s had to adjust. Guys that were master telegraph operators, they had to adjust. The telephone, put them out of work. Telegraph, put them out of work, whatever. Things are changing, and we're going to have to radically rethink what we're doing here and to decide, are we biting off more than we can chew? On this progressive left side, while it is attractive to throw in all these other issues of gender equality and economic equality and racial harmony and proper policing, and are we biting off more than we can chew? I don't know. It's something we will keep talking about. Something I will talk to my friends and colleagues in the industry about, both the industry and the activism side. It's I think we're at this kind of new phase now that legalization seems to be inevitable. It's not a matter of if, but how. I think we're going to have to really coalesce on what we mean by how.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure you join us the rest of this week. We'll have plenty of new content for you. 3 o'clock Pacific time. Over here at Delta 9 House Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.